Welcome back. This season is called India at 70. The idea behind is to explore and discuss things which happened in the post-independence India, that is in the last 70 years, after 1947. Sounds good, right? But then, what is the post-independence India? We often don't realize a structural problem when we learn that India got independent in 1947. I learned geography and history and political science. There's this map of India which I saw at least 100 times. But for a long time, I somehow assumed that this is how post-independence India was right from the beginning. What I didn't realize for the longest time, and most of us still don't, is that there was nothing as India, as in a single country called India that got independent. There were pieces. More than 550 princely states of various sizes and some provinces which were under the British rule back then. So what was getting independent was not a country called India or even Pakistan for that matter. It was a huge land, about 4,000 by 4,000 kilometers, which was already fragmented in about 600 pieces, and that land was further going to be partitioned. Can you see the major problem it had caused? There was no existence of country, and it had to be forged with these many hundred pieces who were not at all like each other to begin with. Here comes probably the biggest contribution of the Iron Man of India, Sardar Vallabhbhai Patel. The credit for uniting all these pieces and weaving a country called India or Bharat largely goes to him and his very able aide, V.P. Menon. I'm sure most of us know what a princely state is. We must have come across at least one in books or movies or even folk tales for that matter. In simple terms, it was an independent land where a monarch, that's a king or a queen, would rule its citizens. In the British India, these monarchs had agreed to be nominally independent in their governance, but they accepted the paramountcy of the British crown over them. So, for example, if you stay in the princely state of Jodhpur, you will have a king governing you and you would pay the taxes to that king, not to the British crown. But the state of Jodhpur still accepted that they are subservient to the British crown and their external affairs, etc., are governed by the British crown. Now, as it started getting clear that the British rule was soon coming to an end, technically it would have meant freedom for the princely states. They could have become independent countries, but the Congress was firmly against it and asked the British government to tell these princely states that they should become a part of India. Lord Mountbatten, the last Viceroy, was initially against this proposal, but he was convinced by the Indian officials that the integration would also slightly ease the pain of partition. In fact, later he helped in convincing many kings to join India. The monarchs of these princely states were obviously divided in how they feel about joining India. Some, like Bikaner, said that they were patriotic and hence they would join India. Some said that they can join whosoever they want, either India or Pakistan. Some, like Travancore and Hyderabad, wanted to remain independent. In fact, Hyderabad went as far as independently appointing representatives in the European states as if it were a separate country. Well, the accession of Hyderabad is a story in itself, so we'll discuss it sometime later. But meanwhile, the Congress kept at their attempts to negotiate with the princely states to join India. So what worked here? I mean, there could have been several countries, hundreds of them, within independent India. How did the states integrate? There are a number of factors here. The first is obviously that the kings were not united. Smaller states did not trust larger states, so they chose to go with India rather than possibly being eaten by the big states. Some rulers decided to go with India and build relations with the Congress in a secret hope that they'll somehow get some powerful political positions. You never know. In some places, for example Travancore, the common population wanted to go with India. Additionally, Lord Mountbatten also helped in convincing many chiefs. He told them that they would not be given dominion status by the British crown, nor would they be taken in as the British Commonwealth. He also pointed out that even if they remained independent, it will be difficult to sustain as economic links will be broken, and there was a chance that communal violence will erupt. This made a lot of chiefs think and finally accept integration. Of course, many states, as expected, said later that they were being betrayed by Mountbatten, but ultimately they agreed to be a part of India. Coming back to Sardar Patel and VP Menon, they showed exemplary diplomacy here. First of all, they made no threat to the states. They did not talk of sending military troops. Rather, they emphasized that maintaining the unity of the subcontinent is of the greatest importance. They also said, and I really like the wording here, that let's sit together as friends and make laws, rather than sitting as enemies and drafting treaties. These negotiations were supported by carefully made documents, individually designed for each state. An instrument of accession was drafted to be signed by the princely state, by which it agrees to become an integral part of India. All of this actually gave comfort to many rulers, who realized that this is the best deal that they could get. And thereafter, between May to August 1947, most of the princely states decided to accede and become a part of Dominion of India, except... Yes, there is an except. Some states proved to be exceptionally tricky and it created a lot of issues, one of which still haunts us today. Who were they and what did they do? We discuss in the next episode.